It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station.
It's the Sports Rush with Brad Rump.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Listen, you're older than I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Oh, I am so glad we get stereo in our headphones, because there's nothing like listening to the Doobie Brothers' China Grove in stereo. Here we go, taking you home on a Wednesday. It is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy. Big hour on the way. Sam King, Lafayette Journal and Courier. It is Zach Edey watch day. We're trying to find if Zach Edey's going to stay or is he going to go. Will he be an NBA player? Will he be a Purdue Boilermaker? That's what we're going to find out sometime before midnight. Sources have confirmed that Zach Edey will make a decision prior to midnight tonight. I saw that tweet today.
Because he has to, right?
Because he has to, yeah. So now the question's going to be, will he wait till 11:59 just to be play with everybody? I don't know what's going on.
A lot of Purdue fans right now on Twitter begging him to come back.
What's the guess? Yeah, I did. I sent a tweet to Zach Edey today.
Oh, really? What did you say?
I asked if his sources have told him anything yet. I said, hey, Zach, you heard anything from those sources yet to know what's going on? But Zach Edey's supposed to be making his decision today, and I assume it's probably going to be some kind of a video. You know, that's the way the kids do it today.
They put
out some kind of a touching video, that can either end with "I'm coming back" or "Thank you, Purdue," whatever it might be. But we wait. Maybe the video production company hasn't got the video fully edited yet. I don't know I fully expected through the process that Zach Edey would be returning to Purdue, because I didn't think his skill set, there was nobody that was going to line up and say, you're a lottery pick. You're a guaranteed lock first round pick. And I thought, if it's not first round and guaranteed first round, it isn't worth going. And I don't know if anything has changed.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, maybe if he finds a team that he feels really happy and comfortable with that guarantees they'll take him in the second round.
No, I just don't think that's worth it. There's no guarantees in the second round. It's just, to me, it's first round or bust for Zach Edey. And if you can't be sure that you're going to be a first round pick, then come back to Purdue. And now, but the question would be, if he returns, is there any leverage for Zach Edey to talk to Matt Painter and say, here's what I'd really like to see out of our offense. Can that be done? Would Matt Painter be willing to be flexible with his offense? Because, you know, it's a fine line, and we'll talk to Sam King more about this, but it's a fine line between winning as a team by getting the most out of your players versus giving your players the most you can give to have them ready to go to the NBA. And if it was simply Purdue trying to set Zach Edey up for the NBA, then Zach Edey might play a little ball screen action with the pick and pop and be able to play around the perimeter a little bit more than what he has, being a traditional post with back to the basket down low on the block. I don't know if Purdue can make those changes, because the other factor in this is they do have a couple of other bigs that already play perimeter. Caleb First being one of them. So I don't know what the situation's going to be with Zach Edey as we study. And already, you know, you see the fake accounts, the phony accounts trying to throw stuff out there. So you have to be real careful about the information you do get from Twitter.
Yeah.
With no check marks.
We almost had that happen to us earlier today with a fake John Rothstein account.
Yeah. By the way, I want to give a big shout out because this is committing your life to youth sports. Jack Campbell. A lot of people are not going to know the name Jack Campbell. But if you're in the region up in Northwest Indiana, you would know Jack Campbell and know exactly what he means, especially to the Chesterton Athletic Department, where he's been a longtime girls basketball coach, but also has been a longtime baseball head coach. And when I say long time, what do you think? 20 years, 25 years, 30 years? How about 52 years as the Chesterton Trojans head baseball coach? And he's finally decided he's stepping down. He's got a career that includes 820 wins in those 52 seasons, 5 conference titles, 19 sectional titles, 4 regional championships. The one thing that has eluded him, never claimed a state title. But 52 years of leading the Chesterton baseball program, it is definitely a new era in Chesterton High School baseball. And a big shout out, because anybody that commits that much time, that much of their life to helping our youth and being involved with education and athletics deserves some credit. Tommy Berry, athletic director, assistant athletic director at Chesterton, said there's no greater evidence of the positive impact Jack's had on his student athletes than when you look at his coaching staff and you see his entire coaching staff are players that have come back and are all former Trojan players.
Yeah, that's awesome. Big congratulations for an excellent coaching career from him. We got a text on the text line 46862 about Zach Edey and other players releasing videos. They said, any such video must end with the preface, that being said, I will be, you know, they always end up saying that. But I mean, talking about Zach, I mean, this whole first rounder bust, I don't see him in the first round in any of these mocks still.
I don't see him in the first round either. Now, you know, there might be teams that have interest, or maybe he did open some eyes with what he did. And so maybe he's received more favorable evaluation than what he thought he was going to receive, or what others might have thought he was going to receive, including his agent. But the bottom line is, if you can't guarantee you've got a first round slot with somebody, I don't see the point of going right now. He's not going to change. He's going to be big next year. He's going to be a guy that can defend the rim. He's going to be a good athlete. Things aren't going to be different next year, barring an injury, and we don't want to even think about that. But the point is, he's got another year to develop his game, maybe be a first-round pick, and if it means 1 year, especially with NIL money, to then get yourself into a first-round slot. And he's still got, you know, he's got to show that he's got that perimeter game, that he can go out in game action and hit a three-pointer, that he can even hit a mid-range, which we haven't seen much of at Purdue. Most of it has been that hook shot or dunk shots at the basket. I mean, he hasn't had to stretch out to even the foul line to hit jumpers. So I personally think it's probably better for him to come back. But we'll see what the decision is.
Yeah, kind of interesting. 2 of the mock draft sites actually have him at 48 going to the Los Angeles Clippers.
That's middle of the second round. All right, 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. What else? Oh, the area softball. We're going to have to talk to Brennan Kitchen coming up later this hour. He's the coach of the Eastside Blazers. We talked to him last year. Of course, last year was the state championship season for Eastside, and they're trying to follow that up with back-to-back. And they made it out of the regional, beating South Adams 8-2 last night. They're going on to the semi-state against Madison Grant coming up this Saturday. Also this Saturday, it is boys high school baseball regional action all throughout the state. And we've got some local teams playing in that. We'll tell you what the schedule is coming up. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4-6. Brett Rump with Adam Lundy. Don't forget, we got Tin Caps Baseball tonight, the Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show. Starts things off at 6:15 with Mike Maz and Derek Decker. And then 6:35, game two of the six-game series against the South Bend Cubs. Tin Caps took a tough one last night, 11-6, or took it on the chin, I guess. Lost last night, 11-6. 11-8, I'm sorry. What am I saying? 11-8 was the final score last night. Tin Caps will try to get on the winning side tonight down at Parkview Field. Tickets available. Come on out and should be a lot of fun. I'll be at the ballpark with John Nolan on the TV side. So look up, give us a wave, say hi. All right, let's talk about the big discussion today. Of course, it's all about Zach Edey. It's all about the Purdue Boilermakers. We've got to talk about it. And joining us now on our guest line from the Lafayette Journal and Courier, it is Sam King. Good afternoon, Sam.
How are you?
Doing well. It's an interesting day for Boilermakers fans. Want to talk about this Purdue team and where their growth could be and come from. Because, you know, Zach Edey aside, you look at this roster and it's a lot of the same faces and same places. So I guess the question is, what does Purdue do to get better if you have the same core group? And I guess, how much time do you think the freshmen will get? Will Purdue change the style with which they play? What does Purdue need to do to make themselves better for 2023-2024?
Yeah, I know a lot of people said last year Zach Edey was strictly a back-to-the-basket player, and that's why he wasn't a probable pro or somebody who was going to last a long time in the NBA, but he went to the draft combine and showed he's got range, he's got great footwork, and it was just a matter of, for what Purdue had last year, the best thing for the Boilermakers to do was to post him up and get the ball down low. So I think that, you know, you adapt to what you have. And I know, you know, in the past, Purdue's had a lot of these seven-footers, but I think you look at the strengths of what you have and what works best and the makeup of the roster, and then you – you know, kind of form your style of play around that. It's changed when Carson Edwards was the go-to player or Jaden Ivey was the go-to player. And I think regardless, it can change again because, you know, you want to win games and whatever the best areas where you're going to have matchup nightmares or mismatches or whatever, that's what Coach Painter and his staff are going to work with. So the main thing to get back to what this team has to do, I think, you know, last year there was a lot of talk about two freshmen starting guards, and that's not a formula to win. Maybe it is if the guards are, you know, lottery picks, but Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer were not. And I think that even though the coaches will never say this, you know, the players will never say this, I think that just going through a basically what is half of an NBA season by the time you get to the NCAA tournament, as far as schedule goes, that wears on you when you're used to playing high school ball, which is 20 regular season games and a tournament, or, you know, AAU, which is a whole different animal than the structured basketball you see in high school and college level. So I think that you saw those freshmen, you know, towards the end of the season fall off a little bit, and you go through those freshman struggles, or, you know, the freshman wall or whatever you want to call it. And I think that was hurtful towards the end of the season because those guys weren't the same players that they were earlier in the year. Purdue will be much more, I think, ready for a longer stretch of games than maybe last year. And I know 29-6 is not a bad season whatsoever, but it was not the same team towards the end of the year. Just making mistakes that it shouldn't have made, missing shots that the Boilermakers had made all year long. So that's going to have to be where the team gets better, is kind of putting a strong showing together for 35 to 40 games instead of, you know, maybe 20 to 25.
Yeah, it's fascinating when you talk about that, because I made that point throughout the last 10 to 15 games of this Purdue season, that I thought especially Fletcher Lawyer was running into a wall. He's not a big physical kid. And, you know, it's one thing to play twice as many games. Then it's a second thing to play longer games, so you're actually accumulating more than twice the minutes. And then the other factor in that is it's a physical league. I mean, you're getting bumped, knocked, beat around, and not only in practice but in games. And I just thought, you know, the legs wore a little bit. It's not like, you know, you can see it, but it's there. And sometimes statistically it shows itself. I thought exactly your point I was making all year, that I thought having two freshmen out there grinding through a Big Ten schedule and a schedule just as tough as Purdue's overall, I thought it started to wear on them late in the season. You know, you mentioned Jaden Ivey, Carson Edwards, a couple of real explosive guys with the ball in their hands. Can Miles Colvin be that type of guy? Is he got that skill set? I know that's a very high bar, and I don't want to set unrealistic expectations, but that's the one thing Purdue really needed last year, wasn't it, to give the ball to somebody that can kind of create on their own?
Yeah, and the one guy who really could was Braden Smith, but he's not going to jump over the top of somebody and throw it down. He's going to get to the basket and kick a pass out to somebody else who's open because he was able to create, or he's going to shoot a layup that, you know, susceptible to being blocked because he's 5'11". So I think that, you know, if Miles doesn't redshirt, which I have no idea, I wouldn't think so looking at his highlight reel. Man, the guy just jumps out of the gym and can do a lot of different things that Purdue doesn't have on the roster. I guess they do now because he's in school, but didn't have this past season. He's certainly got all the genetics. You know, his dad was an NFL player for a long time, won Super Bowls. His sister is just a dynamic volleyball player for the Boilermakers right now, and he came in and was not starting, I guess, as a freshman, but by the end of the year, it was like she's too good of an athlete to keep off the floor, and now she's, you know, lighting the world on fire on the volleyball court. So I think that just being around athletics and having the family that he does and that understands and gets it, that, you know, you're going to maybe have to be patient at times, or you're going to go to a new level where you're 18 years old and now you're playing 22 and 23-year-old men. That's different. But, you know, I think that he'll be well-prepped for what he's in store for and will be able to help the Boilermakers quite a bit with, if nothing else, athletic ability and, you know, just not somebody who's going to go to the basket and probably try to lay it up off the glass.
And, you know, Sam, I was trying to avoid this, but I think I have to give full disclosure since the question is going to be pretty obvious, talking about Zach Edey and the fact that we're actually having this conversation just a few minutes before four. So we don't know if there's been an announcement yet, but let's talk about his game and what he may have learned or benefited from the conversations with NBA executives, because clearly what we were seeing in what video we did have, it's a different type of skill set that Zach Edey was trying to put on display. That being said, can he play that type of position? How flexible is Matt Painter with his use of Zach Edey? Because it's not like he's the only big and he has to be at the basket. You know, can Purdue flex a little bit with their offense should Zach Edey be a part of it and maybe play him a little more like I don't want to compare him to Jokic, but he's fresh on my mind. You know, a big that can play a little bit away from the basket, face up, but then also get down low and post up and beat you around the basket.
Yeah, I think he has, you know, a versatile skill set that people didn't see outside of, you know, practice, basically after practice when guys were just messing around and shooting half court shots and such. That was the biggest thing for Zach Edey going to the draft combine, was to prove I can do more than just post up and, you know, shoot little hook shots and get put back dunks. He's got phenomenal footwork, and a lot of people just thought he was this big stiff under the basket that couldn't do a whole lot. But he's for being 7'4", he's got some speed. You know, I've never been that big, obviously, and most people haven't. But you think of a lot of people in the past who have been that kind of size. They're slow footed and not real athletic, and I don't think that's the case with Zach at all. And maybe part of that is he grew up playing baseball, playing hockey. He's done other things than just pigeonhole himself into basketball because he was tall. He actually pushed away from basketball about as long as he could before he realized, I've got a chance to have a real future if I go the basketball route. So because of that, he's still learning things and picking things up all the time. And I think that now you see that he's able to step out and shoot from the elbow, or he can hit three-pointers. Now it's a matter of, do you want to use him as that type of weapon? I thought he was a much better passer last year than he had been in the past. So he just keeps getting better at things, and maybe you can incorporate more and more into his game. And I know at the NBA level, he's going to have to be able to do some other things, because the league just isn't a post-up seven-footer under the basket anymore. But I do think that he has value, you know, in the NBA game as, you know, whatever he might be, a rim protector or, you know, something. But a guy with that kind of speed and agility and size combined is definitely somebody who's got a future in pro basketball.
How important is it for Matt Painter, as far as for future recruits, future grad transfers, I shouldn't say grad transfers, future transfers, guys that might look at Purdue, for Matt Painter to try to figure out a way to utilize Zach Edey that benefits Zach Edey, but also find a winning formula for the team? Is that a responsibility a college coach has now when you have an NBA-level talent, is to put them in positions that maybe balance that line between college success and future individual success for that player?
Yeah, that's a fine line, because obviously the number one priority is to win. And, you know, that's what Matt Painter's job status is evaluated on. But at the same time, you know, you want to, I think he's said in the past himself, you don't want to play your players to get to the NBA. You want your players to stay in the NBA. And, you know, I think back to Juwan Johnson, and he was a guy that had a lot of raw athleticism, became a really good basketball player at Purdue. And he's, I think he played half a season in the NBA maybe after being a first round draft pick. So you want these guys to, you know, develop enough skills to where once they get to be an NBA player, they can stick around in the league and make a lot of money for themselves. So I think that, you know, when you're recruiting, you're honest with guys about what their role will be, but you have to adapt a little bit as they grow while they're in West Lafayette, because, you know, sometimes you see a guy in one role and he completely alters, you know, what he's able to do once he, you know, these kids get in the weight room or doing some things that maybe they hadn't done growing up. And, you know, I think Zach's situation is maybe unique because he was not very highly touted. He didn't have a lot of colleges looking at him when he committed to Purdue, and he was, you know, I think, ranked 437th or something like that in his class, and comes to Purdue and 3 years later is the National Player of the Year. So I'm not sure. A lot of people probably, when they looked at Zach Edey at 16, 17 years old, said, hey, come in here and we're going to put you out on the perimeter and turn you into an NBA player. I think that Matt Painter knew we've got a big guy here who's, you know, got some decent athleticism, and, you know, we probably can do something with him. The rest was up to him and his work ethic, and it kind of took off here in the last couple of years.
Well, we'll see where it takes Purdue one way or the other, as we appreciate the time, as always, Sam, and I know you'll be all over it with the Lafayette Journal and Courier. And what is your Twitter handle?
It's at Samuel T. King, S-A-M-U-E-L. K-I-N-G. Unlike a lot of people, I'm probably spending more time in trying to decipher who is a credible source and who isn't on this thing more than I am actually using it for anything else. So.
Yeah, that's a new game we play on Twitter, trying to make sure we don't get one pulled over on us. Sam, appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Always appreciate being on.
Yep, that is Sam King from the Lafayette Journal and Courier, covering the Purdue Boilermakers, and does a great job. But I think it'll be real interesting for the future of Purdue, how they adapt to some of their late season struggles, because I still feel like that roster missed that go-to guy that you could put the ball in his hands and he could create on his own. He could finish, he could dish, he could score. I think Braden Smith was effective in breaking down defenses and maybe beating his man, but I think he had trouble with help defense unless he could get it to Zach Edey. It's, you know, if you think about it, think how many times he drove and just lobbed it up by the rim and let Edey get it when the big had to come and help. But if a team is very aware of what their defensive rotations are and they bring a rotation either from a different direction or bottle it up somehow so Edie doesn't have space. You know, it can be difficult for a guy like Braden Smith. But I'm anxious to see what kind of a dynamic Miles Colvin brings to that Purdue offense. 46862, your thoughts. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Of course, the big news of the day, Ben Boudreau is out as the Comets coach. His contract not being renewed. And a lot of thoughts on this one, you know, and sometimes it does get a bit personal when you cover a team. Ben has always been terrific to us whenever we've asked. I mean, we have asked, and this is the thing, a lot of coaches, first of all, you know, they get into game mode and they you know, they don't want to talk to media. We've asked him multiple occasions to come on the show the day of a game, and I don't know that he's ever said no. He's been extremely gracious with his time with us. We appreciate that. He's been very open and transparent, which we also appreciate. We don't have to play a guessing game as far as asking a question and then trying to guess if we got a truthful answer. Sometimes if he didn't want to answer the question, he might just come out and say he didn't want to answer the question. But it's kind of tough for the Boudreaus after his father lost his job midseason in the NHL with Vancouver, and then Ben not being renewed. Now, I have no doubts Ben Boudreau is going to have a great landing spot wherever that might be. The question is, where do the Comets go? They'll have plenty of candidates. I do not doubt that a lot of really good coaching candidates are going to apply to be the Comets coach. But has the bar been set too high? Is it almost a job where the risk of failure has become too great? In other words, even if you do a great job as a coach, it's still not going to be good enough because that bar with Fort Wayne Comets organization is championships or bust. You know, what do you expect? I mean, Ben Boudreau won a championship. Yeah, it was the COVID year, a little bit of a different situation. But, you know, you end up being a bad call away from advancing to the second round of the playoffs, almost knocking off Cincinnati. You know, there's not a lot there that you can look at and say, well, that's definitively why the Comets had to move on. You know, you've got other factors in this that we don't understand. As far as exit interviews, did players buy into his systems? Did the voice get old? You just don't know. I mean, a lot of it may depend on who are the core players that the Comets are planning on bringing back, and what did they say about playing for Ben Boudreau and running it back with another year in Fort Wayne? I don't know. But I can tell you from our perspective, he's been terrific to work with. And so news today, Comets move on from Ben Boudreau. And now we'll be on Coach Watch to see who's going to be the next coach of the Fort Wayne Comets. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Brennan Kitchen, coach of the Eastside Blazers, is joining us on the other side. This is the Sports Rush at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Adam Lundy. And coming up this weekend, it is going to be softball semi-state. And Eastside High School, once again, making a return. The Blazers, after winning the 2A championship last year, not skipping a beat, rolling through the regional, defeating South Adams 8-2 last night. We want to talk to the victorious coach, see what are the similarities between this year's team, last year's team, and what are some of the differences, some of the key players that have stepped up to fill roles. Let's find out all about it, because Brennan Kitchen, the coach of the Eastside Blazers, joins us on our guest line. And first of all, coach, you know, even after a state championship run, you don't want to take regional titles for granted. They don't come easy. You got another one. Congratulations.
Thank you, Brett. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's exactly what we talked about to the girls about when we won sectional last week and regional last night. I mean, it's, you can get complacent with these things and take these things for granted, but I tell you, the winning a championship is always a lot of fun, and we'd never ever want to take it for granted.
Well, you want to hope that you're playing well enough that, and the program gets to a point where it does look like the routine and the norm, and you do make it look easy. But you also want to appreciate all the work that's been done, not only by that team, but the teams before them, to kind of lay the groundwork. And that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about, is last year, state championship. How's it impacted this season?
Yeah, I tell you, the bar is raised, of course, and expectations are that much higher because of it, which is a good thing, of course. But yeah, the expectations and the expectation of winning and so forth, doing the right thing, all those things are there. And last year, you know, they were there, but we didn't have the success or the championship trophies to back it up, I guess. Now we have some of those, at least from last year, to back that up. So just the expectation level being raised, that's probably the biggest thing.
Did you ever fight any complacency with this group?
No, not at all. They walk out there and they expect to win every night. It's a good group of girls. I mean, obviously our nucleus of girls, the leaders on this team, played the state championship game last year. So there's no complacency with this group. They've been working hard, working their butts off since day one.
You don't have a lot of seniors, but you got some pretty important ones. It starts in the circle and continues out from there. But talk about this senior group, because I think, you know, when someone wins it as a junior, I think it makes them that much more hungry to come back and do it as a senior. They don't want to leave with a legacy that they didn't achieve what the class before them did. Sometimes that makes them more hungry. Tell us about the senior class, how they've been as leaders, not only on the field, but off.
Yeah, no question. We've got a great group of four seniors on our team this year. Yeah, it starts, just like you said, with in the circle, Natalie Lauer, senior pitcher for us. She's had a great year again for us this year. Just steady, just very steady. And, you know, the best thing about Nat is she doesn't get too high or too low. She's pretty even keel, and her mental toughness is unquestioned. I mean, she never shows a whole lot of emotion out there. And so, you know, it starts with her, and she's had a great year at the plate for us too. Last year, we DP'd for her, and but this year she's hitting for herself, and she's batting over 400 this year and having a great year all around. So yeah, it starts with Nat, and then, Grace McLean at first base. Grace has had a monster year for us. She just broke the single season RBI record here at Eastside, and she has the career RBI record in just 3 years, because of course these seniors didn't get their freshman year because of COVID. So Grace McLean's had a monster year over, hit at the plate for us. And then Grace Crusher in right field. Grace is a great athlete who bats in our five spot and is a great leader for us. Has had a great year at the plate and in the field. And Katie O'Brien is actually new to our program this year. The RBI this year on the season, and is batting, 500. Our senior group, huge shoes to fill for next year's group, of course, but yes. And that's what we thought last year. You know, we graduated seven seniors, and we thought, boy, we got some huge shoes to fill. And then these girls kind of stepped right up, right into those shoes and have not looked back.
What about the community support? I'm always so impressed when you get up to Butler and get a chance to see an Eastside game, whatever sport it might be. The community really embraces the kids, supports the sports. What's that meant for you after the state run last year? I bet it's been really hyped up there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It always is. Our community definitely gets behind its kids. Any sports, but yes, softball right now. We have, last night it was standing room only here at Butler, and then at the sectional championship game, same way. But yes, I mean, our community is second to none when it comes to support, and our girls love them right back. We always tell the girls too, you don't understand. You may not know now, you will someday, but how special this community is, and how lucky you are to be representing this community, because it's not like this everywhere. So enjoy it while it lasts.
You know, I just got a question. I don't know if it impacts or not, but do sports kind of overlap and breed success for other sports? I was thinking about the baseball run a couple of years ago, and then the Eastside softball run takes the run to state. You've got the football team and their success. Do the sports all kind of play off each other?
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously it's different athletes, you know, for the most part. Some of these girls play play three sports or two sports, and same with the boys. But definitely it's a culture thing. And, you know, Eastside has a great culture within, you know, from teachers to students to the athletes to the coaches. To the community around. I mean, it's just a culture that that we like to think breeds winning. But you know, obviously you have to, at the center of that, you have to have great softball players, great athletes to do anything. And we've had a really fortunate run here at Eastside over the last 3 years to have great athletes go through our school, both boys and girls. So that makes a huge difference. Obviously, you got to have great athletes in order to have a lot of success. And, but you know, that winning does, it does, you know, it's a culture of excellence. And, yes, that's it definitely breeds the success. And there's, you know, the girls and the boys, together, they're out here supporting each other, whatever sport it is. And it's fun to see.
You know, it's interesting. I had a coach tell me one time, you don't win state titles or take runs to state with what you're able to do with kids from the time they're freshmen to seniors, that the process of doing that actually starts when these kids are younger, and it's the support of the parents and getting the kids involved and the kids falling in love with the sport and getting good coaching and fundamental training in the youth programs. What is that like around Eastside?
Yeah, no question. Yeah, you know, last year was my first year as coach, and it's not you know, our coaching staff didn't come in and do anything magically different for these girls. So, we just put them in the right spots but yes, these kids, I mean, a lot of our girls play travel softball, of course. So they're getting, they're playing hundreds of games a year. They're getting all kinds of practices, a year. They're working on their swings in the fall, in the winter, working on their game. And yeah, it's not like it just happens when they're in high school. I mean, the foundation has been laid for these girls to have success from the time they were really, really little in T-ball and lob ball. So, yeah.
That takes a lot of support from the parents too. I think that's a group that should be recognized when kids like this have success, because parents have committed a lot of time and money, let's be honest, in building these student athletes and making this program what it is. And Madison Grant coming up Saturday. What can you tell us about Madison Grant?
Yeah, they're a great hitting team, fundamentally sound, well coached. We know what we're getting into. We played them first round last year at Semi-State, and they are a great team last year, and they might even be better this year. So, yeah, we got a work cut out for us. They've got pop up and down their lineup. So we've got and they can run too. They're athletic, extremely athletic and fast. So yeah, we've got our work cut out for us. We know what we've got to do in order to be successful. It's just a matter of going out and executing on Saturday.
Well, best of luck to you. Congrats again on the regional title, and we'll be pulling for you at Semi-State.
Thank you, Brett.
Yep, appreciate the time. That is Brennan Kitchen, coach of the Eastside Blazers softball team, as they take on Madison Grant coming up Saturday in girls semi-state softball. Of course, the boys are like, a week behind the girls as far as softball. So the boys' baseball, getting into regionals coming up this Saturday. In case you missed it, we talked about the regional pairings and who's going to play who coming up on Saturday in the boys' regionals. You've got multiple sites around the state. And, for teams in our area, Bishop Lewis takes on Westview at South Bend Clay. That game at 11 a.m. And then at 3 p.m., the Class 3A battle between Heritage and East Noble. Both those games taking place at South Bend Clay. DeKalb and Homestead head to Plymouth. They'll play a 3 o'clock game in the boys' baseball regional. Also, Norwell will be in action against Newcastle. They'll be heading to Oak Hill for a 1 o'clock start. And you've got the Blackhawk Christian Braves. They will be taking on Southwood in Class 1A. And that game will take place at Logansport. There you go. There's your boys baseball regional schedule for this Saturday. A lot of baseball, a lot of softball coming up this weekend. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll put a wrap on this Wednesday edition. See, I almost did it. Almost said Tuesday. This Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush next on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back. Final time here on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, Adam Lundy in the producer's chair, and just about time to depart. Get downtown, get the car parked, get up to the press box, and be ready to go for Tin Caps Baseball as the Tin Caps take on the South Bend Cubs. I'll be joining John Nolan on the TV side, and of course right here on the radio, we've got the Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show starting at 6:15 and 6:35 first pitch as the Tin Caps try to bounce back after the 11-8 loss last night. It's their second straight loss. Try to get back to the winning ways here tonight. Oh, got a big thank you going out to all of our guests that appeared on the show. Kent Sterling, always great in the first hour. And, of course, here in hour number two, we had Sam King from the Lafayette Journal and Courier and Brennan Kitchen, coach of the Eastside Blazers softball team, looking to go back-to-back as state champions. I am out of here. We'll be back tomorrow talking more about Ben Boudreau out as the Comets coach. Justin Cohn will be among our guests to get his insights or give us his insights coming up on tomorrow's program, 4 to 6. Don't forget, 7 to 9, it's Caleb McKinney in the morning. And at 3 o'clock, be sure to check out Jim Coyle with Indiana Sports Beat right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.